Hello, you're listening to the C to Z of Movies. My name's Colin. I am the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. Happy coronation weekend.
I disagree.
Which bit? The happy bit? The coronation bit? The weekend bit? It is a weekend. You can't disagree with the weekend.
I can't disagree with the weekend. It's definitely a Sunday as we record. As you know, Zijan, I'm a Republican and I will not be supporting all this coronation nonsense. And since I don't work Mondays anymore, having the long weekend doesn't really mean anything to me.
Oh, so you can't really protest that way. I was thinking like, oh, you'll be protesting by working on Mondays anyway, just because you could.
It just means more stuff is closed. It's great. Did you go out on the streets waving a British flag and saluting the king and stuff?
No. No, there is a street party next near me, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I can hear the music coming out right now, to be fair. It's quite close. I didn't know it's such a big thing, you know, bunting and street parties and stuff.
There's not been any around my way. It's all been very quiet. My parents, though, had a little street party. Did you watch any of it?
No, I was at a wedding yesterday, so that was good for me.
Fair enough. I didn't watch it either. So there you go.
No, I mean, people keep telling me this is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I was thinking, like, I'm pretty sure I will outlive Prince Charles, King Charles III at any point, so...
I think you probably will.
Yeah.
I think you probably will. I'm slightly sad to have missed the fact that they always play Handel's Zadok the Priest, which is also the Champions League theme music, and I think by most people it is known better for being Champions League than it is for being Handel. So, so that would have been a fun moment. Maybe I'll catch the highlights. Today we're talking Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yes, we are.
We've got a quiz on the Never Ending Story trilogy. Who knew?
Me, I didn't as well.
And much more. There is a lot of news, I think. So let's crack on. You got anything that's most enticing?
I mean, it's shaping up to be a very good year for Chris Pratt. Super Mario Brothers film, which I saw and covered into See or Not to Z, has breached the $1 billion mark.
That's it. Wow.
Yes, which pretty much guarantees there's going to be loads of sequels and lots of now Nintendo games being turned into movies, right?
Oh, they're going to make a GoldenEye movie next.
Yeah, is that Nintendo?
That was an N64, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it probably was. do I
know any Nintendo characters outside the Mario Brothers?
Yes, go on.
Well, I mean, Donkey Kong, but he was in the Mario thing, wasn't he?
That's true. That's correct.
Sonic the Hedgehog isn't Nintendo.
Nope. The biggest franchise in the whole world, Colin. Biggest entertainment franchise in the whole world. Bigger than anything out there.
Hello Kitty?
No.
That's the biggest franchise in the world, isn't it?
It's not. It's been made into a film as well, recently. 2 years ago, with Ryan Reynolds.
Free Guy? Oh, Pokemon.
Yeah.
Is that owned by Nintendo?
That is owned by Nintendo.
Okay, I look forward to Pikachu meets Mario.
That will probably happen. I mean, $1 billion, man. You can't make this up. It's
are we gonna get a Princess Peach spin-off?
Well, you watch it, right? Because it's Anya Taylor-Joy.
Anya Taylor-Joy. Well, I mean, I didn't watch the Mario Brothers movie, but maybe I'll watch that one. I can't say. I reckon I will watch Mario Brothers when it comes to streaming. Although, actually, did I tell you that I've cancelled my Netflix subscription?
Yes, you have. You were proudly telling me that last podcast.
I thought I mentioned it. Yeah, so as long as it has to come to Disney Plus, and I can't see that happening. I guess I'll never see it.
What a shame.
I'm not that ashamed. But yes, Chris Pratt has replaced Chris Pratt at the top of the box office with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 overtaking Super Mario Brothers. Mm. Hot off the presses, Adam Driver has reportedly accepted the role of Mr. Fantastic. This is not official, but it's being reported in a few places.
What?
Only as we record, has only come out in the last hour or two, I think. But
wow,
that's an interesting choice if it's true.
I didn't know that. I wasn't reading into it, so anything about this.
Yeah, I mean, there's been loads of rumours, some of which are crazy. I think Mila Kunis playing The Thing was a rumour last week. But this seems to be fairly credible. Adam Driver's a fantastic actor, and it's not a surprise. I think, actually, in one of the prediction things, I had predicted he'd join a Sony movie, which obviously this isn't. But I can't... I'm not sure he's Mr. Fantastic.
I cannot see him as Mr. Fantastic. That's the thing. Maybe I'm too spoiled with the whole John Krasinski having to be Mr. Fantastic image in my mind right now. But
yeah.
I just can't see it.
I mean, I could see him as a Dr. Doom, maybe.
Yeah, that works.
But yeah, and John Krasinski, I think, obviously the fan casting, obviously we got him in Doctor Strange 2. I don't think he was great in that movie. It felt very much like he'd kind of come in for 5 minutes and just read the lines and then left, rather than spending a lot of time thinking about the character, which is a shame. But yeah, the rest of the rumours are, and I think this is much, this isn't, that no one's saying they've confirmed, but there's also rumoured that Margot Robbie could be Sue Storm, and Paul Mescal could be Johnny Storm. Those feel more like just throwing darts at a dartboard.
Sounds like it. I think Margot Robbie can play Sue Storm. Paul Mescal doesn't fit the Johnny Storm.
Depends what they get. I mean, he's a great up and coming actor. I think After Sun is very good. I suspect if he wants to do a superhero stuff, he'll have his pick of roles. I could see him do that. Margot Robbie, yeah. She'd do a great job, but she's got Harley Quinn already. Is she
ready to do this?
That's what
true.
Thought so.
Has Adam Pascal ever have short hair as well? I'm just trying to think. I cannot imagine Adam Pascal.
Adam Driver.
Adam Driver with short hair.
No, I don't think I've seen him with short hair. But I also don't think Mr. Fantastic is going to have long hair. So
It's just.
I'm going to Google it right now.
No, Adam it's Driver. Just edge in my mind. Right, there's a certain look to Mr. Fantastic.
Adam Driver, short hair. Let's have a look. He has done, and it does not look good. It depends what they're doing, I suppose. Because obviously the last time we saw Fantastic Four, it was terrible, but it was very different to the time before that, so who knows what they're going to do with it. But yeah, not convinced.
Oh. Andrew Garfield and Daisy Edgar-Jones will be starring in a film called Voyagers. This will be focused on the love between astronomer Carl Sagan and documentary producer Andrew. Apparently, they're big or famous in NASA. Apparently, Sagan is one of those. He created a message to a company. I think it was it like a pod that was sent to space.
A space pod, sure.
Yeah, well, to create a message basically for potential communication with alien civilizations, basically. So it has includes music and images about Earth. He was the one who created that, yeah.
So I've never heard of Androyan, but Carl Sagan, he wrote the book Contact, which there's a movie based on that, which is about aliens contacting us by, if I remember rightly, sending out prime numbers, because that's the that's the language that we all understand.
That's the way, yeah.
So, I didn't know this story. I'm intrigued to know how that's going to pan out. But that's a good lineup. Daisy Edgar-Jones, another one who's really big at the moment, and Andrew Garfield's always great. So why not?
Why not indeed?
Why not? Voyages sounds. I mean, the title Voyages makes it sound like it's a Star Trek thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, everything with Voyager in makes it Star Trek by default.
Here's some exciting casting news. Hugh Grant is back in Wonka, playing an Oompa Loompa. I'm intrigued. When I heard this, I assumed he was just voicing the Oompa Loompa, but apparently there's like footage of him stuck inside a glass tube or something.
You're going to have to watch it now, right?
I'm going to have to watch it now. I was probably going to watch it anyway, but my Hugh Grant's later career is something that fascinates me, and I'll watch him as an Oompa Loompa. I don't know whether he's going to be orange.
Is he playing all the Oompa Loompas?
Wow, that's a good question.
Just one Oompa Loompa. Are there different types of Oompa Loompas?
I think in the Johnny Depp one, it was just one actor. I forget which actor. In the Gene Hackman? No. Gene Wilder version. I think it was multiple actors, but I don't know what they're doing in Wonka.
They must have finished filming already, right? At this point.
Well, yeah, because it's coming out not too far in the future. So, where does it? Yeah, I don't know whether this just happened and they didn't bother telling anyone. But it's coming out in what, September or something, is it?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
December. But yeah, they must have filmed this already.
Exactly. Who knew? I didn't know. They're definitely not keeping a surprise then for Hugh Grant to be in this film.
Unless it just got leaked or something. But in fact, I must say I didn't know the cast of this at all, but apparently Rowan Atkinson, Matt Lucas, Olivia Colman, Matthew Bainton. I didn't know any of those people were in it, to be honest.
Oh, wow. There will be a sequel to Freaky.
Oh, yeah.
So Freaky was the slasher film that came out, I think, last year or 2 years ago, where they play on this whole body swap trope but as a horror film. So like it's basically like Freaky Friday, but instead of swapping your bodies with your mom,
yes,
because that's always fun. In the original Freaky, there's a teenage girl who swapped her body with a serial killer. Played by Vince Vaughn.
This popped up on Netflix. I've still got about a week left of Netflix, so I was tempted to watch it. I'd say I don't really like slasher stuff, but apparently it's good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And Vince Vaughn playing a serial killer is always good fun. Well, Vince Vaughn playing a teenager is always good fun.
Have you ever done an episode on body swap comedies? I don't know if you've seen enough to get a whole episode out of
but I enjoyed it, but there are bits in the film where I'm pretty sure you need to cover your eyes though, Colin. It gets a bit gory. Well, this slasher, the sequel will be called It's a Wonderful Knife.
I see what they've done there.
Yep.
Because of classic body swap comedy, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep, exactly. Well, in this sequel, a year after saving her town from a psychotic killer on Christmas Eve, Winnie Carruthers' life is less than wonderful.
Oh, no.
But when she wishes she's never been born, she finds herself in a nightmare parallel universe and discovers that without her, things could be much, much worse.
And it's coming out this year.
Mm-hmm. Huh. It sounds fun though, right?
Is this a sequel? It feels like it's not the same at all.
Is it not?
I mean, is that the same girl who was in...
I assume it was for some reason, but maybe it's not.
So that's a girl called Jean.
Okay. So it's not then. It's not a sequel then. It's a completely different film.
It's just a different film with different people in it.
Made by the same writer though.
Right. Okay.
There you go. Joe McHale is going to be it.
Cool. And Justin Long. I mean, you know how much I love It's a Wonderful Life.
I know.
I've also seen the film It's a Wonderful Afterlife, I think. Have I seen that? I don't know. Rob Delaney will be back in Deadpool 3 playing Peter, hot on the heels of learning that...
Everyone else who was in Deadpool 2 is back, basically.
Yeah, basically. Well, not TJ Miller, but everyone else is back. That's fun. I mean, I've got nothing more to say on that, really.
No, I can tell. I can tell. Taika Waititi is directing a film called Clara and the Sun. This is... based on a film by Kazuo Ishiguro.
On the book.
Yeah, the book, basically. Yeah. Which is about the robot girl created to prevent teenagers from being lonely. And it's a story of how she tries to save a family of humans she lives with from heartbreak. So this could be a very, very sad film, which is going to be a change from any film that Taika Waititi has made, really.
Yeah, all right. So he's not doing a kind of... comedy sad Jojo Rabbit.
A possibility.
I've never read any Kazuo Ishiguro, but I have seen Never Let Me Go.
I've read and seen Never Let Me Go.
Oh, you win.
It's a very sad film and book.
Guy Ritchie's next film is an action thriller as yet untitled, and it will star Henry Cavill, Isa Gonzalez, who I've been calling Eliza Gonzalez, and I do apologise, and Jake Gyllenhaal. Not much else is known except that they have all
worked for Gary Chi before.
They have. They're coming back. He's got a film out on Amazon at the moment, doesn't he? Or recently, which
yes,
I've not seen. It's got a French subtitle. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, me neither.
Because Hugh Grant's done a couple of films with him now, and even given my love of Hugh Grant, I thought he was very good in The Gentleman, but it wasn't enough to get me to watch a film that has got it's got something de glare in it. Anyway, if I ever, once a year I tend to go a month of Amazon Prime around Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll watch it at Christmas.
Well, maybe the new Wheel of Time will be out by then.
That's true. Although with the writer's strike, I suppose that's news. I don't know if you've got that in your
No, I didn't know what's going on.
There's a writer's strike. Do you remember the last writer's strike in 2007 when a bunch of TV shows were abbreviated or cancelled?
Yep, I remember that.
And a bunch of films are bad. Well, it's all going to happen again. The crux of the matter seems to be that when they all signed their new deal in 2007, no one realised that streaming was going to be such a big deal. And they're like, hey, pay us more for streaming. I think there's other stuff going on. But
I mean, I thought writers were complaining about ChatGPT taking over their jobs as well.
Yeah, I think they probably want some guarantees as well that AI won't take their jobs.
We've played ChatGPT on our previous podcast.
Yeah.
And it has done a very good job in predicting Fast and Furious 50,
it's got some good
right?
stuff. It's like, got some good stuff. I don't know the ins and outs of this, and I suspect there's rights and wrongs on both sides. But it does, I guess, without making a view of the demands and the response, it's going to have an impact on a bunch of stuff. So various films might not happen. I mean, on a Marvel level, it might throw out the Marvel timeline if they can't get their films made. It's also going to make... I think one of the things they said was that Rings of Power, they're not going to have a writer on set.
Oh, nice.
Which is a... I mean, fairness, I didn't get through that anyway. But things like... So this... I wasn't talking about this. Nick Pizzolatto, who wrote on True Detective, is now doing a rewrite of Blade. But presumably that's going to be kicked down the...
Yeah.
Down the road as well.
Who knows, right?
Watch this point, space. It was. Let's hope it all gets resolved quickly.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is back. He'll be starring in a film called Breakout. Apparently, it's been 4 years since he was in a film. The last time it was in Terminator, Dark Fate.
Who can forget?
I have forgotten about it. I didn't know it was 4 years ago. It felt much, much longer than that.
To me, it felt more recent.
Did you? Oh, no. And he will play Terry Reynolds, whose stepson is framed and sentenced to 25 years in a foreign country. And a film such called Breakout, you can probably guess what he's doing.
It sounds a bit like when he was in Escape Plan, where they had to break out of prison.
Exactly.
Good for him.
I mean, he's like, what, 90 now at this point? I don't know.
I don't think he's 90. But yeah.
You say that, right? We spoke about it last time. Clint Eastwood is like 93, and he's still making movies, so...
Arnold Schwarzenegger is 75.
Yeah, not far.
Let's talk. Do you know what his middle name is?
Why is it?
Alloy.
Like A-L-L-O-Y.
A-L-O-I-S. Alois? Alloy? Huh. Don't know. Doesn't sound very Austrian. Anyway, Pedro Pascal is the latest person to join the Gladiator sequel, as has Connie Nielsen, who was back as Lucilla. It's a Pascal Mescal situation going on.
It really is. He's a big thing now. Pedro Pascal, starring in very, very...
People loving The Last of Us.
Exactly, yeah. Stranger Things, Joseph Quinn is also in it. As the role of Emperor Caracalla.
Fine. I don't know who that is. Is that a real person?
I have no clue. Was Gladiator based on real people?
Yes.
All of them?
I don't know. I think mostly, but maybe not all. What is Last of Us on? I've never seen it.
Why is it on? As in
what streaming what service or channel?
It's
or
on Sky, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's, as you say, big. Obviously, Mandalorian as well. Although I think he doesn't turn up for Mandalorian much these days because he
just voices it, right?
Just voice. Yeah, I think he was doing the suit more in the earlier series. But why not? And Connie Nielsen, nice to see her back.
Yeah, I don't remember her in the first film at all.
Yeah, wasn't she? Wasn't she the sister of Joaquin Phoenix? Is that right?
I cannot remember. But Paul Mescal is playing the son anyway.
Cool.
So, yeah. What else is that? Neil Blomkamp will be directing an alien film, as always. Alien abduction thriller called They Found Us. And Joel Kinnaman will be in it. When he and his daughter undertake a camping trip. And then they find aliens.
I can't believe Neil Blomkamp is still making films. In fairness, didn't he go back to low budget shorts and stuff.
Yeah,
he's had a few high budget misfires.
That's the thing, right? Like, I think he made it big with District 9, and nothing came off from that. After that, which is a shame. Oh well,
good film. Weren't they going to be making a sequel to that at some point?
I have no idea now.
I don't know why I put this here, but we're getting an animated Transformers prequel called Transformers 1 with voices from Chris Hemsworth as Optimus Prime, Scarlett Johansson as Elita, and Brian Tyree Henry as Megatron.
Yeah, I definitely don't know why you put this in. let's
move on and pretend I did.
On a side note as well, the Transformers trailer came on recently while I was watching Guardians. And then I heard one of the voices like, that sounds like Michelle Yeoh. And then I went on Wikipedia and saw it. Oh yeah, Michelle Yeoh is coming out in a new Transformers movie.
Does that mean that you're going to have to watch it?
Oh, I don't think I like Michelle Yeoh that much.
I'm interested to find the level here. Because
I mean, she got an Oscar now. She doesn't need my support anymore.
you like her enough to be very excited by the Oscar. Not enough to finish watching Last Christmas. Or to start watching a Transformers movie. Okay, I'm getting the levels. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair line.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's like me and Anya Taylor-Joy. I don't like her enough to watch the Mario Brothers movie.
Maybe on Netflix.
But maybe on Netflix. Would you watch this Transformers movie on Netflix?
Maybe only the Michelle Yeoh parts.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure someone will put a YouTube compilation of the Michelle Yeoh parts, and you can just watch that.
Yeah, I would appreciate that so much. My final bit on news is that there is supposedly a Dodgeball sequel.
Yes.
Yeah. I like the first Dodgeball.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's good fun. Really good. So I'm looking forward to the sequel. This is like, what, 20 years later, maybe? I can't remember.
Not far. I think it was about 2005, 2006, something like that. Yeah. Actually, no, it might be older, actually, because I think it had come out when I started uni. So yeah, probably 20 years. Yeah.
I just remember enjoying it when it came out. So it'd be good to see where they are. Or whether they're going to keep the same cast, etc. Probably they'll do like a, you know, like all sports movie sequels, like a Rocky.
Okay.
Yeah. And you see Ben Stiller coming back training the next big thing.
Joining up a young up-and-coming dodgeball player. Is Ben Stiller still married to the woman from that film whose name escapes me?
I don't see why not. Although I don't really actively follow Ben Stiller tabloid writings, Colin.
Well, I feel like you probably do, though. I feel like you probably do. Christine Taylor. Oh, I've got so much more, and it's all unimportant stuff.
Exactly, Colin. I do put a filter on.
Oh, me too. But
really?
Sometimes.
You like to end on a high as well.
I do. Chris Pine is going to be voicing King Magnifico in Wish. I'm surprised that didn't come up on your list.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's hidden, and I just avoided it. Joining Ariana DeBose and Alan Tudyk. Again, very late casting news announcement because it's already finished filming. I've already seen the trailer for it, so I'm not sure why they're announcing it now.
I guess for a voice role, you can do it as late as you like. Yeah. You can do it live into cinemas. Speaking of voice roles that are exciting, Rihanna is going to be voicing Smurfette in the 2025 Smurfs movie.
I thought they already had a Smurfette.
They apparently not. I mean, I guess they did in the previous two Smurfs movies. But Smurfs are back. We're trying again. I don't know why.
So we can do a quiz on it, Colin.
Yes, we need these two films. Well, there are three films. We could do at least three. Here are three other films that that have got sequels in development. The Pope's Exorcist apparently has got a sequel in development. That surprises me. Beetlejuice has got a sequel in development. I thought that was already true, but maybe there's another stab at it.
I feel like it was one of those things that we predicted
a prediction rather than a news item.
Yeah, it felt like it. I need to listen back to what I said earlier.
Wonder which one of us predicted it. This is exciting.
Yeah.
I did write it down, so we'll find out, I guess. That's probably you. But Cliffhanger. Cliffhanger has got a sequel in development.
Cliffhanger the weird thing where this guy was hanging off like snowy mountains? I remember the poster quite... Is it Sylvester Stallone? It is, right?
It is, yeah. Die Hard in Mountains, I think, was the idea. I seem to remember quite liking this film. Sylvester Stallone obviously is bringing back his previous characters. I think it's fair to say that the guy from Cliffhanger is quite a long way below Rocky and Rambo in the Sly Stallone legend. And John Lithgow was the baddie in that film, but he died in the film, so he's not coming back, I would have thought. But the most exciting news...
When by most exciting, you mean the least exciting?
No, I mean the most baffling, really.
Okay, go on.
Eva Longoria is making her directorial debut on Disney+. It's coming out on 9th of June, a film called Flamin' Hot.
Okay.
Can you guess what this is a film about? If I tell you, it's an origin story of...
Yes, I think I saw a glimpse of it. This is about Cheetos.
It's about Cheetos. It's a story of Jesse Garcia. Not far, he's an actor. Jesse Garcia is playing a janitor who claims to have invented Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
What?
I'm confused and excited. I think it's... I mean, I'm confident it's going to be a comedy from seeing the poster. But, yeah, it's coming out on Disney Plus in just over a month.
Have you heard of Flaming Hot Cheetos before? I hear good things about it. I've still not tried it.
I think I just marked the exact moment where our podcast... I just taking a step back and realising where we've got to. We've been doing this for 7 years now, I think, and we've finally got to the stage where we're asking each other whether we've eaten Flaming Hot Cheetos.
I mean, it's a fair question given what we're talking about right now.
It's a good question, and I don't know the answer.
What? What do you mean you don't know the answer? Like,
I mean, I've eaten other crisps in my time. I don't think I've ever bought a packet of Cheetos. I might have had them in like a... If they were served in a bowl at a party or something.
Okay.
I had lots of what's-its. Are they similar?
Yeah, on that note, let's move on to this. To see or not to Z.
Ah, Zizhang. That's not what it's called, is it?
Yes.
To see or not to Z, the segment where we talk about the films we've seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not Z them. Let us know, cedarzmovies@gmail.com. Have you ever eaten a Flamin' Hot Cheeto? What did you think? Zizhang,
yes.
What have you been watching?
Nothing. Apart from like the first 20 minutes of Peter Pan and Wendy.
Oh yeah, did you give up or?
Yeah, like I don't know why I even bother trying to like watch a Disney live action film. You know, like trying to give them a chance and hoping that anything will come out from it that I will particularly enjoy. It's fine. Like I'll just go through like 20 minutes in and I'll think like, why I should just watch the cartoon again because it's so much better.
See, I was tempted to watch this one. It's got fairly good reviews, isn't it? But because this is one of the only two really Disney movies I watched a lot as a kid, the other one being Robin Hood. So I thought I might go back and...
The British ones, basically.
Check it out. Yep, just the British ones.
I see.
I didn't realise that, but that is true, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, well.
I watched a bit of Sword in the Stone.
Exactly, Colin. Yeah, I don't know where that was set.
Wow.
It's clear where your loyalties lie when it comes
seems
to Disney movies.
Seems to be. I'm wearing my Union Jack hat.
Right, yeah, now. I know.
I've also been watching very little. At least not, I've been rewatching a few things. But the I'll talk briefly about A Tourist's Guide to Love, which is a Netflix romantic comedy starring Rachel Lee Cook. Seems to have been funded by the Vietnamese Tourist Board. I could be wrong. And it's just nothing.
Why do you even do this to yourself, Colin? Like, I actually saw this on Netflix as well. Like, yeah. not see the film, but saw them advertising it on Netflix. I'm like, yeah, no.
I think I wanted something to put on whilst I was doing a crossword.
but I think Netflix is tanking its subscription to all the crosswords that you've been doing so far.
That's exactly it. It's a landmark for me, Zijan, because previously I decided after watching, I think it was called A Royal Wedding or something like that. Royal Engagement, maybe, which is a rubbish film. And I decided at that point I'm only going to watch Netflix romantic comedies or Netflix own movies of any kind if they star someone I know. But this is the point I think I might have decided I'm not going to watch them anymore at all. Because whilst I know Rachel Lee Cook a little bit, and I've seen some of her stuff and enjoyed it, there was just nothing in this film. And it's the most watched film in Netflix in the world at the moment. Is insane because it's just it feels like it's been written by AI.
I mean, everyone is doing a crossword in the whole world, right, Colin?
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe everyone's just doing a crossword whilst watching it. Anyway, so as I say, my Netflix subscription expires in a week or so anyway, so I won't be watching them anyway. But yeah, it's don't bother.
Great.
That's my review of that one.
Nice. Short and sweet.
Yep. We move on into our main segment of the day, which is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Over to you, Zijan.
Yeah. came out only just like 3-4 days ago, but we've been on top of it. Written and directed by James Gunn, stars an ensemble cast, so pretty much everyone has written.
Michelle Yeoh didn't.
Michelle Yeoh definitely didn't. But who remembered her part anyway?
I'd forgotten she was in it.
Me too. So in this film, the Guardians embark on a mission to protect Rocket from the High Evolutionary. So High Evolutionary is played by Chukwudi Iwuji. Mm-hmm. I think he is called Chuck in the interviews I've seen him in. So yes. We're just going to go by Chuck.
Let's go with Chuck. Yeah.
Basically. This is pretty much the final Guardians film as we know it, as both Zoe Saldana and Dave Bautista have publicly announced that this is the last time they will play their characters. So this is probably the last time we'll see them team up as the Guardians of the Galaxy, really. So,
and obviously the last time James Gunn's going to do a Marvel film at all, probably.
Yeah, as he's moving on to be the head honcho of DC. So this is pretty much an ending of sorts, really, this film.
Yeah. As ever, we will do non-spoilers for a bit and then spoilers thereafter. So if you want to skip spoilers, you can do that. I rewatched Guardians 2 this week, kind of in preparation. And I've forgotten just how much has changed since then, because we had both the Avengers films
in between,
and they appeared in Ragnarok a little bit, but
Ragnarok, they appeared
not Ragnarok, in Love and Thunder,
so, yes,
yeah, and obviously we had the Christmas special, but from where they were in that film to where they are at the start of this film is quite a significant change anyway. But shall we start going through the cast as we always do?
Yep.
It's a long old cast.
It really is.
So some of them, I don't have a lot to say other than, yes, they're still good.
Yep, me too.
I think Chris Pratt is in that camp. He's great as Star-Lord, and he's still great as Star-Lord.
I think so too. I think this Star-Lord has a lot more range than the other Star-Lords, because he gets to display it. He gets to show a lot more in this film than he did in the other films, which I think, is good. Shows off his acting chops a bit, because he tends to fall into the play the Chris Pratt character in all his films, so this gives him something different to do, which I do appreciate. Although as you say, this follow up from his previous films, at the end of Avengers Endgame, basically, just for spoilers and for anyone who has not seen any of the MCU, basically, Chris Pratt's character Star-Lord is basically mourning the loss of Gamora, who died in the first Avengers Infinity War. War. But now there's another alternate universe Gamora who came back. So now he doesn't know how to process his feelings. So at the beginning of this film, he will see him, just drinking his feelings away and still mourning it, which is a slight departure to when we see him in in the Christmas film. He was still depressed, but in the beginning of Thor: Love and Thunder, they were just basically fighting aliens. So I guess that didn't really count. But
yeah, and kind of searching for Gamora.
Yes,
at that point, because she's made it clear she doesn't know who he is. She's not really interested in finding out who he is. That was what I took away. I think he's great. I don't think he had as much to do in this film as he might have, as he did in the first one, because I think in the first one he was very much the lead, and this one is much more of an ensemble.
Yep.
But you're right. It's not just popping up with a joke.
Yes.
He gets to do more. And I did appreciate, I think in general, the kind of the humour of this was still funny, and I think all three Guardians films have been some of the funniest, probably the funniest films in the MCU, but it wasn't just joke.
No, thank goodness for that, though.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that. I put it in my spreadsheet saying, thank goodness they don't quip every single time.
I did hear someone saying that in the Avengers films, or the Russo Brothers ones, he was a lot dumber. Like, he was the kind of comic relief. I think that's probably fair. And so it's nice to see a bit more. Like, he is.
Which ones were there though? Like in Avengers, he was pretty serious, right? Because it was serious stuff that was happening. So which films were there where he was?
Well, he was serious, but I think it wasn't just joke. Although it wasn't so much him joking as him saying stuff that was stupid for a kind of a punchline.
The thing is, wasn't it just at the beginning with Thor? That's where all the punchlines were.
Yeah, and when they went off with Thor, at the end of it.
I guess so.
When they kind of met Tony Stark on Titan.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I get that.
Whereas Lisa, I mean, there's a nice scene here where he's got to try and break through various barriers, and he just does it because, like, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and he is the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy for a reason, right? Not just throwing crypts around. Yeah.
So Zoe Saldana is back, as she says, Gamora, but a different Gamora. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked this. I think it found the right balance between, because she had this, like they all did, a kind of an arc earlier on where she went from being kind of cold and refusing to kind of engage with Star-Lord to being much more open, and now she's gone back to an earlier version, but it's not just let's do the same thing again.
No, I agree. I think there's something different about it, but something familiar about it as well, if that makes sense. Like, you know, it's a different Gamora, but you know deep down she has the same essence as the original Gamora. So I get it. I like what she did with it. So
yeah, and she even has some sympathy for Peter Quill, because I'm glad it wasn't just him going on. I mean, there's a little bit of this, but I'm glad it wasn't just him going, you love me," the whole movie. And I'll be honest, I think he's slightly exaggerating, because even at the end of Guardians 2, they weren't exactly
a couple, right?
No, maybe it happened off screen. I don't know. So I thought that was well covered. Karen Gillan is back as Nebula. Even since Volume 2, she seems to have come quite a long way.
She has. She's very different from her original character, as what I know of her, really.
Yeah.
Funny thing is, I was watching an interview with Karen Gillan, and it was James Gunn who said that you should play Nebula like Marilyn Monroe, slinking around everywhere.
Mm,
I thought that was quite a clever metaphor, really, way of framing it. But yeah, she is very different. Like, she's even funny at some points, but she's... still has this cold robotic look, which I do appreciate. I mean, like, Nebula wasn't one of those characters that I thought I would grew to care for.
Yeah, certainly not in the first one. And I appreciate it, because Karen Gillan is very funny at times, and I appreciate that they have managed to bring humor into the character, but kind of a different, like, each of these characters is funny in a different way. And I think in the first one in particular, she just never really got any laughs at all. And I think I remember reading an interview saying, oh yeah, we always did a take that was funny and a take that wasn't, and pretty much the ones that weren't ended up in the movie. So I appreciate the way they've found a way to make that character amusing without doing the same kind of jokes that other characters are doing. Rocket, the de facto lead of this film in some ways.
Basically, I mean, James Gunn wrote this film with Rocket in mind. I think he's made it very clear when he started this trilogy of movies that he knew he wanted to end with a film exploring Rocket's past.
Yeah.
Which has
said that Rocket is kind of him in some ways.
Yes, which they did in this movie. You've probably seen the trailers. You'll see parts of how Rocket was created, really, essentially created. I did like his story. I found it moving at parts as well.
Oh yes, yeah, we'll come on to that.
Yeah.
Voiced by Bradley Cooper. But however, I discovered in a Q&A that James Gunn was doing that Bradley Cooper did not voice Rocket in the flashbacks. That was voiced by Sean Gunn.
Ah,
which I did not realize.
Wow.
I don't think it's massive spoilers to say we see a lot of flashbacks of Rocket in this film.
Yeah.
So, although Bradley Cooper's taking all
the credit,
the flawless, Sean Gunn probably did more. There's also, I can't remember, I've written Noah, someone, a female actor who voiced the youngest, like the baby Rocket.
Oh.
So there's several different Rocket voices in this. But yeah, Sean Gunn does a phenomenal job. Obviously also playing Kraglin, doing more in each film, and also the brother of James Gunn. Also, Kirk and Gilmore Girls.
Yes, who can forget that?
Dave Bautista is back. It's Drax, still funny. Still good.
Still doing his own thing. I think a lot of the things that I want to speak about this all these characters, I can't really without spoiling a lot.
Okay.
But yeah, he still is good, you know. I think it was one of the interviews again. I keep repeating this from interviews, but I think James Gunn was saying, like, he thinks Dave Bautista is a very good actor.
Yeah, I've seen him say several times he's like one of the best actors he's worked with. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Guardians 2, I think my favourite Drax moment was him trying to eat crag nuts or something, trying to eat nuts and thinking he's invisible because he's doing it slowly.
Yeah.
My favourite moment from him in this film is where he's trying to lie down on the sofa and just gets being told not to. And he gets some emotional moments. We never really see as much because we obviously in the first one, his wife and daughter have been killed.
And we keep forgetting that though. Like everyone keeps putting Drax as this dumb brute, and he does come across as dumb because you know he's so matter of fact and doesn't understand metaphors. But you know he literally lost his daughter and wife, his entire family to Thanos, right? And he should be grieving a lot. And they did touch on it when he met Mantis, and she was reading his feelings, and she found out how hurt and how sad and how broken he was. Yeah, they just never went into it much deeper than that.
Because obviously, as you said, this movie goes into Rocket's backstory. I feel there is a
potential
a movie that could be made about Drax's backstory that we're not going to get now. Pom Clemente F is back as Mantis. I think also still funny, but also gets to do a bit more. We saw quite a lot of that in the Christmas special,
which I love though. I love that so much. Yeah,
it's nice to see her not just be. Because in Guardians 2, she was great, but kind of doing the same thing most of the time.
Yeah, I can never get her powers right, though. Like, her powers has verged from, like, you know, just controlling emotions to literal mind control at times, which is very different.
Do whatever you need.
Yeah, to move this plot along.
Vin Diesel is back as Groot, doing what he does.
Yeah.
The new people, Chuck, as we call him. Chuck Iwuji is back. He's there for the first time as the villain, the High Evolutionary.
So the High Evolutionary in this film is a guy who's playing God. Really, he's trying to create a perfect civilization, essentially, and he does that by experimenting on animals. Really, is that a spoiler? That could be a spoiler.
I don't think so. I think maybe it is. I don't know. But yes, he created Rocket. I think that's in the trailers.
I think he's a very, very great, good villain. I think he had so many parts in this film, like, I just hated him. I just wanted him to be gone for the Guardians to beat him up and all that, because, like, he is evil. Like, I'd like to have, a villain who's just pure evil, that I don't have to care about his ulterior motives or whether he's a potential anti-hero or whether he has a sad backstory. This guy is just pure evil, and I love it. Like he plays it so well.
It's quite nice to see this film. So the clues and the name, the Guardians of the Galaxy, saved the galaxy in both volumes 1 and 2. This film is basically about them saving their mate.
Yes.
The High Evolutionary doesn't want to take over the... Actually, I think he does want to take over the galaxy, doesn't he, at one point? Doesn't he want to replace everyone?
No, in a way.
I can't remember now. But I don't think he wants to destroy Earth. I think he just wants to make creatures. Weirdly, it turns out he did make whatever those gold people are called.
Yes, the Aisha, the High Priestess Aisha.
He made the
second film.
Yeah, and he made their whole people. He seems to have nailed that. I mean, why does he keep trying?
Apparently not good enough for him. One thing that I liked about him as well is that he doesn't quip, he doesn't make jokes, he doesn't crack any, you know. He's pure serious, and you can tell he's serious right from the beginning. And, you know, you will actively root against him because who likes a villain who hurts animals, right?
Yeah, and there's been some feedback, I think, or some reviews saying that this goes too far into that. And I don't think it does. I think there were times where it could have gone a lot darker than it did. And I was having read some of that, I was expecting to see kind of actual scenes of animal cruelty and stuff, and you don't get that so much. But
no, but I did cringe at a part where he was turning the animals into anthropomorphic beings.
Oh, yeah.
And that bit, I was like, oh, no, please don't make this look horrible, because it could look really bad.
And I think I can absolutely see, like, if you... Yeah, this could be painful for some people to watch. I can see that. And I think, you don't want to bring kids to this, for example.
No, it's quite gruesome.
He's a bit like Sid from Toy Story.
Yeah.
We have Will Poulter as Adam Warlock, hinted at in the post-credits in Guardians 2, because created as the perfect being, isn't he?
Yeah.
Although let out slightly early.
So he has the mind of like a child, really, teenager.
Yeah, teenager probably, or maybe a young teenager. I feel to me this is the biggest disappointment of this film, in that I don't think the character was very interesting. I also don't, in terms of how he was played, how he was written, I also don't think in terms of plot
he had anything to it. Was
necessary at all.
Nope. And I put it in my one as well that he was wasted as a character. I think, right, what happened was that, so Adam Warlock has always been associated with the Soul Stone.
Okay.
In the Infinity War. You know, he's always been so associated with that. What happened was that I think they changed the way the Soul Stone was acquired in the Avengers films.
Mm.
And now they're kind of stuck because they've introduced Adam Warlock at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but they needed to do something with him. And now they can't really do something with him now because he wasn't part of the whole Infinity Crisis thing.
Yeah.
So they just had to shoehorn him in this film with nothing really to add.
And yeah, that was it. Slight spoilers, but it's very early on. You do see him attacking most of the Guardians, and he's very powerful, and he has a huge impact in that way. But that could have been anyone.
Yeah.
And then he just hangs around. He occasionally tries to attack people or save people and do various bits and pieces. And obviously Aisha, his mother, well, he used to call her mother, is in this as well, but again, not really necessary.
Nope. You can probably cut all your parts and still have the same film.
So I think that was probably the biggest disappointment for me of this was him. I mean, it's a bit like at the end of the second one, we had the new lineup of Ravagers. We had Sly Stallone, we had Michelle Yeoh, Miley Cyrus voicing something or other, three or four other people. And most of those characters reappear, albeit, as we said, Michelle Yeoh doesn't. Miley Cyrus has been replaced by someone else.
Mm.
They don't do anything at all. Sly Stallone has like three lines wandering around. And you think, again, it was set up like it was going to be this exciting new team. This is, I think, a criticism of Marvel in general, is that they set things up as exciting, this is what's going to happen next, without seeming to have actually thought about what's going to happen next.
No, and that's the thing. Like, that's why I worry about all the Phase 4 films.
Hmm.
Because they're all just setups, right? And there's so many characters that they're setting up.
Yeah.
It's not going to end well for them.
Yeah, it's like at the end of Eternals, when like, hey, we've got Harry Styles, and the end of Thor, like, hey, we've got Hercules, and they're like, do you know what you're doing?
I don't think they do.
Anyway, Nathan Fillion was in it. He was funny. I thought he was great. Really enjoyed that. And Zijin, I have two rules of movies.
Yep,
my first rule of movies is that no movie needs to be longer than 150 minutes.
Yes.
2.5 hours. This movie, I thought it was 2 hours 29, but according to Wikipedia, exactly 150 minutes.
Oh, perfect.
Well done. My second rule is that Linda Cardellini is always the secret weapon of whatever film she's in.
That's a very specific rule.
It is very specific, but I stand by it. She voiced Lila.
Oh, did she?
And she was obviously the secret weapon of this movie.
Oh, she really was. She really was. Lila, for those who do not know, because you mentioned that, do we need to spoil it now? Is it a spoiler?
Lila's in the trailers. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, Lila is the otter friend of Rocket. Should we say that? We can come on to more later. Apparently, Linda Cardellini also did the motion capture for it, although I've not seen any footage of that. And, of course, plays Hawkeye's wife, but I don't think that's relevant. Hmm. We've spent a long time on the cast, so there's a lot of cast.
A huge cast. So what do we think of the film?
In general, I thought it was a really strong ending to the trilogy. Emotionally very satisfying. Some very sad moments, very funny bits. I think too complicated. There were certainly times when I was thinking, I don't know who is where or is doing what, and that was partly because you've got this number of characters, I guess.
Yeah.
I liked the fact it was about them as a team and about them just saving Rocket as opposed to a huge galaxy thing, which meant we didn't see that much of the High Evolutionary for a lot of it. We just we saw him when we needed to. I think it paid it off well. So yeah, thumbs up from me. What about you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. I think this film is without a doubt probably the best MCU film since Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've had a lot of... I mean, I wouldn't say that, but I mean, MCU has been mediocre bad for the past few films, and I was losing my faith in it. And it's a shame that James Gunn is moving on to DC and we're not going to see more films like these, because I mean, this is definitely the best one since the last Spider-Man film. There's no need to set up future movies. I'm going to spoil it. No tie up with this whole, you know, Avengers Phase 4 to Phase 6 thing. It's just a good, solid movie with very good character development, something which has been sorely lacking in all the most recent Marvel films. Yeah. I mean, Cosmo the dog has more character development than the Wasp in her own movie. You know, the Wasp was in the title of Ant-Man the Wasp, and she had zero character development compared to Cosmo the dog. And it's ridiculous how far, you know, Marvel has sunk, really, in all the other films. When it's just ridiculous. But this film is wonderful. It's like watching a Marvel film again, you know, where in the first few phases when you're just enjoying all the characters and seeing how they come together. So it's a shame that it's going to end on this.
Yeah. But I think you make a really good point there, that it's not setting up the multiverse saga anymore. It's not like this film is not saying, I mean, okay, it, we'll come on to spoilers, I guess some things it kind of sets up ish, but it's not like setting up separate timelines. It's not having to do anything other than tell this story.
Yeah.
And I think there are times, clearly Marvel trusts James Gunn and they've let him do what he wanted. And he's always said, yeah, they never made me do anything. This film is exactly as I wanted it to be. This is the director's cut. I think that can be a mistake. I mean, look at the Snyderverse, and I know that's not a view everyone shares, but I think it can be times where if you just say, or even look at Doctor Strange too, that felt like they just said to Sam Raimi, do your thing, Sam Raimi. And I don't think that was successful for me. And presumably Peyton Reed. I don't know what they let him do. But this is, James Gunn knows what he's doing and they let him do it. And that's fantastic. And yeah, I basically agree with exactly what you're saying. I don't think it was perfect. I do think that both the first two Guardians films I liked more on a rewatch. So I think there's the more depth to them. Like, I don't know, Ant-Man and the Wasp 2, I can't imagine that rewatching it, I'm like, oh, look at all these great layers. Whereas this feels like it'll just be richer and richer on watching it 2-3 times.
I think so too. I don't think it's perfect either, but I cannot say what I don't like about it until we reach the spoilers bit.
We should probably crack on. So very briefly, there's a great hallway fight scene.
Oh, I love that.
Really good.
I had a big smile plaster on my face when that happened. It was awesome.
Reminiscent of some of the stuff in the first Avengers, I think. I did love the running thing about Kraglin calling Cosmo a bad dog. And that's like the worst thing you can say to a dog. We got the first F word in the MCU.
I know. Well, I used very in an odd position, an odd place, I would say.
Yeah. For some reason, they released that scene online. I've got no idea why. I think apparently it was just an ad lib.
Yeah.
And they cut most of those. But yeah, just telling someone to open a door.
Yeah. Very weird choice to put an effort in, but oh well.
I found it interesting that some of the stuff in the trailer was changed a bit. So there's a bit in the trailer where, well, that is spoilers actually. Mm. But some of the dialogue that is in the trailer is not the same as the dialogue in the movie. And I don't know whether they deliberately changed it or whether it was just a different cut or something. But
I didn't pick that up, so...
Is it a spoiler? Not really. There's a bit where Rocket says he didn't want to make the world better. He just hated things the way they were. Or something like that. And in the film, he doesn't say he says you, because he's talking to the High Evolutionary at that point.
Very nice. Very clever.
And I find that interesting. And confusing. They go to a living planet type thing, or a living something or other. And it's absolutely disgusting. But, I mean, in a clever... In a good way, I suppose.
Yes, it should be, right? Like, not all planets are, like, clean and pretty and all that.
I say living. It's not like like a person, but it is made of flesh, basically.
Yep. Ugh.
Ugh. My most nitpicky thing here.
Go on.
So at the end, and again, this isn't really a spoiler, even though it's at the end, they play Dog Days Are Over by Florence and the Machine, and they're dancing around, and the dancing does not sync to the music at all. Could they not have played the music whilst they were dancing? Apparently, this was always his only choice for that song. It just bugged me.
Now that you say it, now I remember it. Like, it didn't bother me back then, but now that you say it. I thought it was just like, you know, a choice that the actors make to not sync to the music. But
maybe.
Yeah.
All of them? I've written down here some of the smaller characters or smaller roles who appear, just so we've said them. Nico Santos, who you might know from Superstore. Do you ever watch Superstore?
One episode, I think.
Okay. Well, he's one of the main cast in Superstore. He turned up in this.
Isn't he in Crazy Rich Asians?
I've not seen that. So maybe. Jennifer Holland, Mrs. James Gunn, was in it, of course.
Yep.
Pete Davidson voices Flectic, and Judy Greer voices Warpig. I don't remember either of those characters. Howard the Duck is briefly back, and Tara Strong, who was Miss Minutes in Loki,
yep,
replaces Miley Cyrus as whatever she voiced.
Ah, yeah, Tara Strong is a very, very big voice actor, so she's been in so many things.
Has she?
Yeah.
Okay. That'll do for non-spoilers, I think.
Yeah. Now, spoilers. We have only 4 minutes to go left in this podcast.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I mentioned about the things that I didn't like about this film.
Yes.
I did not like the number of cop-out deaths that they have in this film.
Okay.
Yeah. So many of them, so many times when you think, oh, they're dead now. And no, they haven't. There's a point when Drax was shot very badly in the film. And then he was still fine, apparently. He healed quite well, to be fair. What else was there? There was Peter Quill at the end.
Yeah, so I genuinely thought they were killing off Peter Quill at that point, because his face went crazy.
Really bad, yeah.
It was only that generally when we have a death of that magnitude, it's either completely out of the blue or it's built up to more than that. It was the only thing that made me think, really? But yes, he was stuck in space for a bit like Yondu was, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Did they want to do another Yondu death scene?
He was saved by Adam Warlock. And did you appreciate the creation of Adam thing where they touched fingers like they do on the Sistine Chapel? that was a little art reference for us all there.
Yep, they did.
Which is also done on the cover of the Cheetos movie poster.
Oh, of course
everyone's doing it.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we all went into this thinking that Rocket was going to die, or maybe Drax, and we get deaths. We get billions of deaths.
Well, I mean, we get an entire planet being decimated.
Yeah,
I mean, the Guardian trilogy seems to have the most deaths.
It does. I mean, the first ones, yeah, they kill off our planet, didn't they? Or certainly a whole fleet. This one, yeah, just a whole counter Earth gets destroyed. The kids don't seem to mind that all their parents are dead. They're like, yeah, cool, we're off. Let's do it.
Yeah, it was.
In fact, did they save the kids?
Which kids? The ones on the planet?
Well, they saved the kids' kids, but they didn't save the animal kids, did they?
No, they saved the children of the corn, but not the animal kids.
The children of the corn?
Yeah, I call them children of corn. Do you know that it's based off the
Stephen King or something?
Yeah, they made a film of it, and all the kids have blonde hair.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Including one kid who is. This is the big thing of Marvel Phase 4. Is getting kids into stuff. So hot on the heels of Thor having a kid. Phyla is in the new Guardians lineup. And seems to have got some powers or something. What do you think of the new Guardians lineup?
Weird.
So we've got Rocket, we've got Groot, we've got Kraglin, we've got Phyla as mentioned, we've got Adam Warlock, Cosmo and Blurp.
I mean, like, the power level difference is a bit wide.
Yeah, because Adam Warlock, basically any time they ever fight, Adam Warlock could just kill everyone, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think we're going to see them again, this lineup?
I mean, I think if Marvel feels like they're running out of steam with their current slate of films, they would bring them back, put it that way.
Isn't it, I think, I can't remember who it was Bob Iger or someone else, high up in Disney or Marvel, maybe it's even Kevin Feige, has said we've been doing kind of second and third films for people that didn't necessarily deserve it or didn't necessarily warrant it. And I think that was off the back of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. But I don't think they'll do a Guardians 4. I just can't see it.
No, they may just appear.
But you might chuck them into an Avengers. I think probably not. I think we've seen the last of these. So it was more just a kind of...
Based on the end title, except for one.
Apart from Star-Lord, yes. Yeah. The legendary Star-Lord is returning, which apparently is the name of a comic book run.
Yeah, because as well, I think in one of the comic book runs, there was a romance between Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde from the X-Men.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
That's something that could happen. Yeah, and that was the first thing that I didn't like. The second thing that I didn't like is the whole, we are guardians, we do not kill. And yet they promptly destroyed everyone in the corridor, you know? Like, Gamora sliced a dude in half. Like,
yes, it's how come you kill all the henchmen, but you don't kill the main guy?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, leaving him to die in his in that planet, yeah, which was going to explode, is probably the same as killing, right? Not saving is the same as killing.
I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. Batman Begins. Yes, and fair. I mean, fair, like Nico Santos, I can't remember the character name. Peter Quill literally jumped off a roof and used him as a
landing board.
And like just crushed him to death.
He was pretty dead at the end. So yeah, this whole no kill thing, right? Like, at least don't reiterate it all the time. Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't fit with your entire film.
And I'm not quite sure what powers the High Evolutionary is supposed to have, because they beat him up pretty hard. And he
Did it? He seems to be able to destroy things at a whim, but not really.
Yeah, has he got telekinetic powers or something?
Ish. Yeah, I don't follow the High Evolutionary comic book run at all. So I can't be able to tell you.
Fair enough. Yeah. But it was nice seeing him being beaten up.
It was satisfying, that's for sure.
So in the flashbacks, we see him creating a rocket and his friends Lila, Tiefs, and Floor. Oh. And it was heartbreaking.
Oh my goodness.
So Tiefs is a walrus, Floor is a rabbit, and as mentioned, Lila's an otter, but they've all been experimented on, they've all got mechanical parts, and they're all friends
with Rocket.
With Rocket, and he says, me and my friends are going to fly off into the forever and beautiful sky, and because they've never seen the sky apart from him. And I think beautiful that they're all kind of lovely creatures. We're all friends, and at that point, Rocket is lovely as well. He becomes later bitter, as you might expect, and the High Evolutionary kills them all.
In this horrible fashion, right? Like, the first death was Lila. She was shot, and then she was escaping, and then his other friends were just casualties of.
Just happened to be there.
Yeah, just happened to be there. It's like just an awful way to go, right? It's just. Oh my goodness. No wonder Rocket is so bitter, right? I would be in this circumstance. Yeah.
And this is why you seem like really pushing people away. And they talked about this in the first and second film, particularly the second film, about how he pushes people away and doesn't form
relationships.
Although he's always had that kind of tightness with Groot, we've seen. I guess maybe
Groot can really die, that's the thing.
Yeah. As an aside, we get a few more words from Groot. I love you guys, is what he says. But the Marvel Afterlife continues in confusing manner. So we've already seen a very weird Egyptian afterlife in Moon Knight.
Yep.
We've seen a Norse afterlife in the post-credits to Love and Thunder.
Yep.
We've seen a kind of afterlife-y thing for Iron Man-ish.
I guess that counts.
And now it turns out these animals have an afterlife, because Rocket kind of has a little chat with Lila. Interestingly, they all still have the kind of mechanical stuff that's been experimented on. They're not kind of back to animal form, which is probably good, actually. But she says, you can come with us, but not yet.
Yeah.
Probably the moment where there were most tears in my eyes.
Yeah, that was really, really sweet. I mean, anything to do with the animals was... Like, I can't believe... Well, actually, I can believe, but well done, James Gunn, in making us care so much for animals that we've only seen in this film.
Yeah, and I do appreciate... Okay, they all got shot and killed, but it wasn't... You never saw them tortured, for example. I really thought we were going to see that. And I'm glad we didn't. Because, I mean, once the rabbit has said, my name's Floor because I'm lying on the floor, I was like, do not hurt this animal. Actually, the bit where I had the most tears in my eyes is probably when Rocket saved all the little raccoons.
Oh.
Because they've evacuated all the children, they've evacuated the higher life forms, and he's like, no, we need to save them all.
Oh, you're such a big softy, Colin.
I certainly am, Zijin. I certainly am. Famously. Dear. And then we can see We haven't talked about the guy getting his face ripped off. There you go.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, what's there to say, right? But at least we get to see the face, so it's gruesome.
As done by Rocket. So they all end up. Star-Lord is back in Missouri.
To see his grandfather.
A lovely moment with his grandfather.
And he's finally let go of Gamora.
Yes. Speaking of whom, she has found her family, and it is the Ravagers. Which we see kind of... I thought it was a really good ending for her, actually, to say, yeah, she doesn't belong with the Guardians, she belongs with these people.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's
good. Nebula and Drax, they're kicking off on nowhere, looking after kids, running the place.
Yep, running an orphanage, basically, at this point.
Yes. Nebula has changed a lot. And Mantis is off with those three creatures that... I felt very much like Doctor Who, in a kind of... They just want to be friends.
Yeah, well, she just wants to do her own thing, which I kind of get, because she just... kind of joined the Guardians after living with Ego for so long. She hasn't done her thing.
Yes, yeah. Yes, I appreciate that. I don't know whether we'll see her again. Mm. Maybe. Since it was revealed in the Christmas special that she is half-brothers of Peter Quill, it kind of makes sense if they do team up again at some point.
Yeah.
And we get a nice little cameo from Michael Rooker as Yondu. That was nice to see. Anything more before we start post-credits?
No, I think that's it, really.
So we already talked post-credits a bit, actually, but we see the last post-credits bit. Peter Quill, back with his granddad, seems to be entirely ad-libbed.
I didn't watch that at all.
Did you not stick around for that?
I never stick around for post-credits nowadays. Well, not... Yeah, I only stay for the mid-credits.
Didn't miss too much. So he's talking to his grandfather. It seems to be just ad-libbed. It doesn't seem to mean anything. He's talking about mowing the lawn for a neighbour or something. You see... His granddad's reading a paper. It says Kevin Bacon tells all about alien abduction.
Nice.
I think the best bit, though, is that Peter Quill is eating some cereal. And after it fades to black, you can hear the sound of the spoon on the bowl, which is basically the same sound or very similar sound to at the end of Endgame, where you could hear Tony Stark, Iron Man, hitting metal. I just like the idea of the spoon on the bowl making the same sound. I thought it was funny.
Whew. Wow.
There you go.
It's a long one, this one.
It is. Shall we push around the world later days to next
time? Yeah, let's do that.
Can't believe I rushed to finish watching that today.
Oh. It was 3 hours long.
3 hours. Oh, man. You can hear us complain about around the world later days next time. So we'll move to the quiz on the Neverending Story trilogy. And I think you're going to win.
Do you think so?
I wrote my questions yesterday, and I did not do much research.
Question one. Where was the Neverending Story produced, making it the most expensive film produced outside the US or the Soviet Union?
Oh, I definitely read it was the most expensive produced outside those places, but I did not read where it was. It's based on a German book, so I'm going to say Germany.
That's correct.
Hurrah. Which of the trilogy was directed by Peter MacDonald?
That would be the last one, Escape from Fantasia.
Correct.
Question two. A young Jack Black appeared as a bully in which of the films?
The third one.
Yes, that's correct.
Question two. Who wrote The Neverending Story on which the film was based?
Michael End.
Correct. I think it's pronounced Ender, but I'll let you have it.
Ender. Question three.
Pronounced Michael Ender if he's German, but anyway, yes, correct.
Which actor was the only one in The Neverending Story to who returned from the first film?
The guy who played the shopkeeper.
Yes.
Can you give me that?
No.
I don't know his name.
Thomas Hill.
Cool. At the start of Neverending Story 2, what does Bastion have a fear of?
Oh, what is a fear of? See, I've read the books as well. I read the book. Yeah, I have.
Oh, wow. I have never seen any of these.
Spiders? Let's go with spiders. Those are a popular one.
It's heights.
Yeah. Question four. Which American director helped with editing and marketing of the film to prepare it for the American market? The original medallion also hangs in the office.
I have absolutely no idea. Let's say Steven Spielberg.
It is Steven Spielberg.
Huh. Wow. Question four. Who played the bully Slip in The Neverending Story 3?
Jack Black.
It was.
All right, my last question is, according to The Neverending Story, the giant turtle-like advisor, Morla, won't help betray you because he is allergic to what?
Mushrooms?
He's allergic to youth. He doesn't want to help him because he's a little boy. Every time he comes near him, he sneezes.
All right. So to win it, what is the name of Urgle's husband?
Urgle's husband? How do I know this?
One of the things about not having seen the film is I don't know how difficult
these are. Yeah, I know. This is like, I think this is the third film where, I think these are the gnomes, and I cannot remember the name of the other gnome.
I think it's in the first film.
Is it?
I could be wrong.
Urgle's husband. Let's go with Falcor, because it's the only thing I know.
Engiwook.
Yeah, no clue.
Well, it's a draw.
Yeah, see.
I'm happy to have escaped with a draw, if I'm honest. Next time, we are quizzing on the Blade trilogy.
I keep forgetting there was a trilogy of it, yeah.
Mm. Again, films I've not seen.
Me neither.
What's our main topic for next time, Zijan?
Okay, you've been dragged into this one by me, but it's 100 years of Disney animation in general, and I thought it would be a good thing to do the top 10 Disney films, and we're going to do like non-Pixar, non-MCU, non-Star Wars, just to make it a little bit more confusing.
I look forward to putting together my list and hope I've seen 10 of them.
I'm sure you have.
We'll see you then.
Bye.